Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the master of mirth and inveterate storyteller Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. Together, we, the Brieflys, strive with dogged determination to keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. And we also strive to follow Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Let's start today's show, as usual, by introducing the Brieflys. And bear with me, because I forgot to bring my reading glasses. but I think I got it pretty well memorized. Yeah, I could probably cross people over here occasionally. Yeah. Bruce, the captain of an airplane, and Kevin, the constitutional law professor. And,
That's close.
But sitting beside me, an engineering show from behind the board of the Voice of Vachon, Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon, and keeping us on the magenta line is my friend, flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, VOV board member, West Texas Roughneck, and Eastern Montana band member, former Army Intelligence Specialist and fellow treetop flyer, Truman O'Brien. How are you, Truman?
Wow, after that, I'm great. Thanks. Thanks for asking. Yeah.
Okay. Zooming in from his home here on Vachon above Burton is the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, in addition to chairing the Equity, Social Justice, and Inclusion Committee of the Vachon-Maury Community Council, our tireless defender of democracy who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate, Kevin Jones. Welcome, Kevin.
It's truly accused. It's all true. Yes. Good to be here.
It's true. It is all true. Exactly. Zooming in from his home is historian extraordinaire, skipper of the Vachona, president of Vachon's own fantastic heritage museum, party animal, and our own globe-trotting guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Holman. How you doing, Bruce?
Oh, I'm doing great, and it's good to be here, despite the fact that we're losing our summer and moving into fall, but I guess that's good too, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. We moved into October and halfway through October in one big hurry.
Yeah. Very quickly.
I don't know. Mine is the voice of Craig Bellis, former tow truck repo man, teamster, apprentice auto mechanic, Pinkerton guard of Pan Am's first 747, high fashion shoe salesman, former Washington State Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General, tort and constitutional law professor, two-time Fulbright scholar and international arbitrator and raconteur. And mediator. Humble as always.
Yes.
And I'm fine, too. Thanks for asking. Joining us today is Elizabeth Shepherd, outgoing editor-in-chief and current reporter of the Vachon Beachcomber, amongst many other things. How are you today, Elizabeth?
I'm great and really happy to be here with you guys.
Great. We're happy to have you here for sure, and we're anxious to talk to you about the time that you spent saving the Vachon Maury Island Beachcomber. But before we start learning about your experiences in piloting the Beachcomber through the last few challenging years, let's check in a moment to see what everyone was about over the last week. Bruce, what did you do this last week?
Well, it's been that week of getting ready for what's happening today, the rain and the storm. So getting the boat covers on, getting the boats, put away in storage, the crab boat put away in storage, getting lawn chairs put up, getting the lawn mowed for hopefully the last time, but we never know for sure. Getting leaves blown, all that sort of stuff. And also just getting out on the island. I mean, it was a beautiful weekend. And so, it's that great farewell to summer, it's sort of a bittersweet time if you think about it. You know, it's sort of the sweetness of summer, bitterness of autumn, and yet at the same time, things are turning green again.
Yeah, yeah, the pastures for the horses and whatnot are quickly turning green and growing, at least for a while. So, Kevin, how about you?
Yeah, it was a good week. The mighty DeRosa is back on the road. What's referred to affectionately by the Vachon Bikes owner as the antique bike is the one I bought in the mid 1980s, early 90s when I visited Italy. And it's been sitting kind of in the garage dormant for a while, but new wheels and a few new equipment, and it's going. And I had a chance to ride around Vachon Mori Island the other day and realize how much of a blast that is. But the other thing I should mention is I'm taking my junior high school home economics bread baking to a whole new level. I think the people who ran the school district thought that it was sort of breaking new ground to ask whether, boys should go to home ec. And of course, a lot of the boys were like, I can eat and go to school at the same time. I'm in. So yeah, learned to bake bread, and we're sort of working on some new recipes. So it turns out a pretty good week for me.
That's cool. Your bike, it's a road bike?
It is. Yeah, DeRosa is a little factory just north of Milan, and they built racing bicycles for Eddie Merckx, for example.
Oh yeah, and it's got all the Italian accoutrement on it, like Cinelli handlebar
set, Cinelli headset, handlebars. Oh yeah.
Nice. I have a bike myself, which I don't ride nearly as much as I should. It's a 1971 Falcon. Now that's not a Ford Falcon. That's a British Falcon.
Nice.
And it's quite the bike. It turns out to be a bit of a collector's item. It's in great shape too, because I did the same thing. I tuned it up and put new tires and whatnot on there and stuff. So
right on.
Now I should ride it. Truman, how about you?
Well, I had a very busy Thursday, to say the least. And I apologize, I didn't get a chance to hear your show.
Last Thursday.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
You still can. I just want to say.
Yes, I can. I can go back to the archives for you folks who are interested. You can go into voiceofvachon.org, go to shows, the shows tab, and you can find the Morning Scramble. And in there will be Greg and Mike.
Mike and your shows as well.
Yeah, mine as well, if you're so inclined. No, but I had 12 tons of hay arrive at my house on Thursday, which was not my favorite time of year because of the hay fever. But I was pretty proud of myself for surviving. And I had a heat pump installed in my house. So for you heat pump guys, I've now joined the ranks, and I am thrilled.
Oh, yeah.
Thing is great. I really nice. And they tell me it uses about as much electricity as a 75-watt bulb. That's what I was told. Yeah. Of course, that was a salesman.
Truman, you're like an appliance magician now.
It's listen.
Like, you got the magic touch, man.
I have been through it, haven't I? Oh, man, this year. Well,
I'd say.
I've replaced every appliance in my house. Every one in my house. And in the boat as well.
That's right. The boat as well.
The boat as well.
And a few in the airplane.
And a couple in the airplane. That's right. Man, I've just had the touch this time.
I was going to say, we know how to spend money. I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
A number of things. Oktoberfest celebration on the private sort of celebration on the island that happens every year. It's happened for about two dozen years. Beautiful day on Saturday for the Oktoberfest. Unlike Truman, I had hay. Truman delivered it on his truck.
They did.
But my strong like bull wife and I unloaded it and stacked it.
About a ton and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
Or and almost 2 tons.
We're actually not quite as allergic as you are.
No.
Worked on my stairs, the never-ending stair situation where I'm remodeling the stairs on the back deck. But Truman referenced last Thursday Morning Scramble, which was great fun for Mike Nichols and myself here on the Voice of Vachon from 9 until noon. We had the theme was the Roaring Twenties, so we played songs from the Roaring Twenties, original recordings, as well as many much more modern covers of 1920s songs, some like songs done by like the Smashing Pumpkins, and surprisingly good songs and renditions of them. We also had Jeff Hoyt, as was mentioned by Truman, in for about 30 minutes talking about his four shows that are coming up Friday, Saturday, and two shows on Sunday about It's Vashon Isle, the great recreation of the P. Monroe Schmuck radio show of 1926, which I am thrilled to go see. I have tickets. You have tickets, Truman.
I do.
I know you do.
I do.
And our guest today, Elizabeth Shepherd, I had an interview with Jeff Hoyt that on last week's Beachcomber,
right on
the front page above the break.
He got top of the page.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That was fabulous.
Such a cool show and such an extravaganza. Typical Jeff Hoyt, you know.
It is truly.
Don't do something halfway.
Every one of them is a little different, and our own Bruce Hallman's going to be. You're on every one of them, aren't you, Bruce?
Indeed, I am.
Okay. That was a test, and that was the right answer. Good. Elizabeth, what have you been up to over the last week?
Well, I had a fabulous weekend. You know, I'm more free all of a sudden because we have a fabulous new editor at the Beachcomber, Alex Bruel, and all of a sudden I see time opening up, which is what I was hoping was going to happen. So I didn't work very much over the weekend. Crazy, because that's all I ever did on weekends.
You're able to
Saturday,
relax a little.
Sunday, Monday, just head down.
Oh.
So I helped my husband get moss off of our roof and clean the gutters, and kind of wanted to go back to work.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't sound like a vacation to me,
you
know?
And what else? I did work a little bit because I went to... I went to the fire station open house and to Cider Fest to check those things out. And I'm telling you, they were both lit, as the kids would say. The fire station open house, unbelievable. They thought of everything. There was a mascot. There were a bouncy castle, a firehouse-themed bouncy castle. There were Rotarians there. They served 750 pancakes to people. It was so much fun. I mean, Vashon Be Prepared was there. The Sam Yates Community Foundation was there. I mean, it was super fun.
Oh, that's great.
And just a really good time. And Cider Fest, always a lot of fun on Vashon to see what that's all the stuff happening there. And
that's great. I missed both of those this weekend. And I'm sorry I did. That sounds tremendous. You remind me of a saying about retirement. Not that you're retired, but they say the major problem with retirement is there's no vacation from it.
That's right.
And it just seems to be work that you used to do when you were working, and now you're just focusing on the stuff at home, and you're wondering, how in the name of heaven did I ever get anything done when I was working?
I didn't get anything done when I was... the long-suffering husband of mine, Tom Hughes, did everything. So, but yeah, I helped.
Were you on the roof?
No.
Good.
I was below
with
the clods of moss falling down on me and sweeping them as fast as I could.
And a net.
It was miserable, absolutely miserable. But we're in good shape for the winter. No, we're not going to.
That makes a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be wearing a hat and rain gear and maybe an umbrella for that job. Yeah.
It was dramatic, but I was just sweeping, getting out of the way and sweeping some more.
I was up on the roof as well. Truman can tell the stories about getting up on the roof. I put ladders on top of ladders
I've said this before, but those photographs that you see of why women live longer than men, they're all of Craig. Those are all pictures of Craig.
Risk taker. I got my, you know, my flight instructor was Truman, who gave you an idea of what kind of risk I'm willing to take.
Indeed.
Today is a significant day, as are all days. October 10th is the 283rd day of the year. 82 days remain until the end of the year, 21 days till our Halloween celebration here on Main Street in Uptown Vashon, and 76 days till Christmas. How did that get upon us so quickly? Today is also World Day Against the Death Penalty, World Mental Health Day, World Homeless Day, and on a much lighter note, World Porridge Day, and National Hug a Drummer Day.
Okay.
So find a drummer and give him a big hug, or her. Karen Carpenter was considered by many to be one of the best drummers of all time.
Mm. Listen, I got.
You're thinking Gene Krupa, aren't you?
No, actually I'm not. This weekend, I had the opportunity to go to the Jam in the Atrium at VCA. And I have to tell you, we were supposed to put in a plug for next Saturday. Bruce Ferris, who's an amazing bass player, was going to call in, and somehow he missed the call. But Saturdays 1 to 3 at VCA, Jam in the Atrium, unbelievable jazz. If you like jazz at all, and they had last week they did a tribute to Chick Corea.
Oh yeah,
and the drummer was unbelievable.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my plug.
I won't ask you his name.
Oh, please don't, because I have no idea.
And finally, on this day in 1973, U.S. Vice President Spiro T. Agnew resigns after being charged with evasion of federal income tax. As I said, it seems rather benign by current standards.
You know, when I was in Baltimore going to school, he was Ted, not Spiro, Ted Agnew, and he was the governor.
Yeah.
And big posters, Ted Agnew. He didn't become Spiro until he ran for VP.
That's
interesting.
Mm-hmm. I wonder where Spiro came from. Do you know Kevin?
I don't. Yeah. But I do want to jump in on this if you allow.
Yeah.
I think in this theme of continuing to make history here on the Briefly, I'd say along with Spiro, now that the feds have placed a lien on Rudy Giuliani's Florida condo due to $550,000 in unpaid taxes, perhaps the property will eventually be seized and turned into a Trump administration corruption theme park. Disney, just thinking ahead.
That's not bad. What was it last week that somebody suggested that Mar-a-Lago be turned into a homeless shelter?
The Trump properties in general.
In New York, in
particular.
And the Trump towers and Chicago.
Yeah, because of all the immigrants that are being shipped north from Texas. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we've got to keep, these things are possible, and we have a historian, so anything could happen.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We could be making history. You're absolutely right. Let's transition into our small talk session with Elizabeth Shepherd, the outgoing Beachcomber editor. Do you refer yourself ever as the editor-in-chief?
No, I don't think I ever did.
Well, I'm going to.
The editor-in-chief sounds good.
The editor-in-chief. Yeah. World
editor always seemed like a big stretch to me. I couldn't possibly imagine calling myself editor-in-chief.
Well, welcome, Liz. And just to get us off, here at the beginning of this, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you've lived, education.
It's a long story.
Oh well,
Craig.
I know. Just don't start out with how much you weighed at birth.
That's right.
All right, I wrote it down because I knew you were going to ask me this, and I just wrote it down because it's long. But I was born in the Great Plains state of Kansas to a pair of very smart and very fun educators. And I spent most of my childhood in that state, except for the times we traveled to Oklahoma and Texas to visit our kinfolk down in those states.
Kinfolk.
Kinfolks, yep. And so when I was 17, my parents moved from Topeka, Kansas, where I grew up, for the most part, to Oklahoma City, which thrilled me because that meant that I got to go to the University of Oklahoma to college. And I went there, and I studied theater there. I have a theater degree, very useful degree. I highly recommend it to everyone. You can do anything. If you can put on a play a few times, you can do anything. So anyway, I left Oklahoma in 1979 and moved to New York, where I worked for a theater producer and an art gallery owner who was an alum of the school, and that was a good time. I moved to Chicago a little bit after that, and I worked in various places there in the arts. I have a long arts career history, and I worked for Chicago International Children's Film Festival in Chicago, which was a great job and a great gig. So anyway, we're getting to the good part. We're getting to Vashon here.
Wait a minute. Didn't you also work at the Children's Theater in Seattle?
Yes, I did. We haven't gotten to that yet.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's right. I apologize. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I fell in love with one of my coworkers at the place where I worked, and we ran away to the Northwest. We knew one person in the Seattle area. And somehow that person knew somebody who had, now this is how easy it was to find housing on Vashon back in those days. One person, she knew somebody who had looked at a cabin on a place called Bunker Trail and an island called Vashon. And we called the owner of that cabin, and over the phone, he rented it to us. For $500 a month.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
This was 1997.
Wow.
And it was, you know, we arrived from Chicago and perched on the edge of the Bunker Trail. So that was our arrival on Vashon.
Wow.
And we worked in Seattle. We had kids.
Just on the in your spare time.
We had twins.
Twins? Oh my God.
Which got us off of Bunker Trail in a hurry. We moved to town. And anyway, I worked in Chicago, in Seattle at Northwest Film Forum, which is a wonderful place. It's a beautiful, beautiful home for filmmakers in Seattle. And I worked there for 16 years, and I did a children's film festival there that was a lot of fun and kept up my children's film festival life. But somewhere along in, I think it was 2008, I saw an ad probably in the Beachcomber. Maybe Susan Reamer told me in the grocery store that they were looking for an arts editor 15 hours a week. What a gig, you know? And I thought I could do that too, because I always like to write. I've always written a lot of different things, but I never really worked in journalism. But so anyway, I got to be arts editor of the Beachcomber for the next 5 years in addition to my other job. And I loved it. It was so much fun. And anyway, I left for a little while, but then came back to the Beachcomber, same job, 15 hours a week in 2018. And then 2020 happened and everything changed. And all of a sudden I was just focused. You know, I was the only person left at the Beachcomber, basically, except for Paul Rowley and Daryl Lynn, publisher, holding down the fort. And so anyway, I just got serious about it, really. You know, the pandemic kind of had a huge impact on what I wanted to do. And I realized it was also time for me to probably move on from Northwest Film Forum after 16 years. So anyway, that's the story. Sorry.
That's
too long.
Too long.
I have to tell you, first of all, thank you very much for what you did at the Beachcomber. I mean, in my mind, you absolutely saved the paper.
Oh.
I mean, without you, I think it would have gone under.
Well, you know, Daryl, it's hard to kill a great thing like the Beachcomber.
Well, I know, but it took your
Daryl did everything to, you know, our publisher, to keep it going. And Paul Rowley, when he was there, it was crazy what was going on, you know? And we really had to, like, rethink. It was great because I could use my theater training and I could rethink it. And I saw it as a project, you know? Yeah. And by that time, I was a better journalist. You know, Leslie Brown really taught me how to be a journalist, and so did Susan Reamer. And so by that time, I was ready, you know, to do what I did. And now I'm really happy to have Alex there.
I got to tell you, I think there are probably a few listeners out there who heard you say that your theater background was a perfect way to prepare for a number of different professions, and they might have thought you were being sarcastic.
I wasn't.
I know you weren't. I wanted to point that out. I agree with you 100%. There are majors like that force you, it's kind of an outdated concept, but force you to use both your right and your left brain.
Mm-hmm.
The precision the writing, the creativity, all those things that I'm sure came to the fore when you started working at the Beachcomber. Mm-hmm. And you became the editor in what year again? 2019?
We didn't have an editor for a while. Okay. It was Paul and I were both reporters, and then Paul left, and I was the only reporter. And then I finally became editor. It hasn't been that long. I became editor in 2021 in the fall. And we had another reporter there for a little while, and then 11 months, and she left. And I was by myself again.
That's amazing.
And so, you know, it was really hard to hire a reporter, you know? I mean, journalism is not a great paying job, you know? And it's a hard job, and you need a lot of skills. And we just couldn't find somebody that wanted to be the reporter after that. And so I decided I could be the reporter and we could get a new editor, and that would really be the thing to do. And that would be saving the Beachcomber truly, because I was getting kind of tired.
You know, Brian Brown, our mentor, Brian was a writer for Time Magazine for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes a particular mentality to be able to do that. An inquisitiveness and a, what's the other, being able to think on your feet. Mm-hmm. And anyway, all of those attributes are pretty amazing things to have. And it's great that you have those innate.
You know, that actually, Kevin, that might, I think you were going to have a question that's somewhat related to that.
I was actually, you know, I mean, Liz, you mentioned the challenge of finding people just who are available to work on, you know, to keep the paper going. Was that the biggest challenge at that time, or were there other things that really kept you awake at night?
Well, it was hard to do this. I was hard to do the paper by myself, you know, but so many people stepped up to help. Like Leslie Brown would write something. Susan would write something, you know, Bruce Holman would write something, you know, would write a history piece, you know. So it was like kind of building this community of people who could contribute to the paper. That was something I think the theater training gave me a head start on. I mean, that's just the way we think. It's like, who can help us? Mm-hmm. Who can help me? And finding those people. That was, so I think that doing it alone, you know, for me was really hard. But there was also just a lot of news during this time. This was just like a fire hose.
So speaking of which, what do you think is the biggest story that you covered during your tenure?
I think COVID, you know, every single story was about COVID for a while. That was a pretty big news story. It colored everything that was going on, and our community was really in danger. And, you know, speaking of partners, and the smartest thing I ever did was get Vashon Be Prepared to start to handle that for the Beachcomber. You know, they were sending out those email alerts practically daily, and I was like, we need a weekly report on COVID. How are we doing? How are we standing with cases and hospitalizations and later vaccinations and all of this stuff? And so that was really helpful. But then there were just a lot of news stories, you know, businesses, Sawbones, struggle, and, you know, people. It was just a struggling time for the whole community. And so that was a huge story. I don't know. I mean, there's so many. It was like VCC closing. This all happened just in the last couple of years, you know. CMAR and the healthcare district breaking up. You know, King County purchasing 110 acres of Misty Isle Farms. Seattle Indian Health Board arriving, which is we're still just, that story is just unfolding, you know. We'll keep telling that story. You know, drama sometimes in our taxing districts, except for our little airport district. That's leave it a little bit of that. Yeah. We get Mary Bruno helped us cover that.
Oh, yeah, so, for sure.
So human trafficking. I mean, this was all just in the last year, a huge raid here on our island. And so, you know, the crash of the Cathlamet. I mean, it was like it just...
Right, one after another.
Everything kept happening. And I guess the thing that's been the biggest task for me in the past year or so has been these two teacher scandals that we had at our in our school district, because I felt a real responsibility to cover those and cover them well, and really make sure that the public had the information that it needed about what had occurred, what the accusations were, what the district was doing, what the district's final results of those investigations were. And so it's, I just felt like that was really important to cover. So,
yeah. And a question about, one of the questions that we came up with were awards and that you've received or that the Beachcombers received. But a question I have is it fascinates me about the editorial. Do you use to decide, or how do you decide what to cover in an editorial? Is it something that kind of rises to the top, or?
Yeah, I mean, and it springs from the coverage that, we did that week, mm-hmm. It's sort of the last thing we do. Mm-hmm. I remember Leslie telling me she went home on Monday night and had a beer and wrote the editorial. And it's kind of and I found that to be true, too. It would kind of flow out after I'd been through this week of reporting and thinking about our community and, thinking about what makes it strong, thinking about what threatens our community. I wrote some good editorials, not every week, though. It's a little bit of a. It's like, oh, the editorial. Now Alex is doing them. It's exciting.
Well, I think it would be from somebody who is not an Islander, that to come in cold. I think that's would have to be a pretty tough job.
Well, I mean, I could always just write a love letter to Vashon. If I couldn't think of anything else, I would just write a love letter.
Yeah. Sure,
because our community is really so beautiful in so many ways, and we're so interconnected, and we're so lucky. Right. And just thinking about what makes us strong, sometimes I would do that if it was like 11 o'clock on a Tuesday morning and I still hadn't written it. I would like, okay, love letter time.
There you go.
Or yeah.
So how about awards? What kind of
I have I'm breaking news here.
Okay.
Because the Beachcomber has won awards always from the WNPA Better Newspaper Contest, and it was just announced, and we won some more this year.
Great.
And guess who was one of our writers who won an award?
I can't imagine.
Does it begin with an E?
It begins with a B.
Oh, a B?
Yeah, I wondered if it did.
And a B. And so we won a prize, Bruce Holman. You won a prize.
Ah, yes.
I entered your story about looking forward and backward and forward at the Portage store. They have a category called history, history feature story. And mm-hmm. Bruce Holman and Terry Donnelly won the prize for best history story, third place. I mean, we were a little bit robbed because I thought that was a great story. And an important story.
Yeah, at least I'm on a pedestal, right? So.
Right. Have you ever won one of those before? Did anybody ever enter you into those before?
No, never. So
because you've only published about 400 of those stories.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah,
absolutely. To everyone, yeah.
Cool. Nicely deserved.
Yeah. So, and Darilyn won a bunch for her ads, and I won some, for long and short news stories. And I won one for a health or medical story about CMR, and it was called A Tale of Two Clinics. Remember the week that they each bought property?
Yeah.
And CMR didn't tell the healthcare district that they bought the Spinnaker building. I informed them of that.
Yeah. We brought them in for right in the midst of that. And it was funny. They were both learning things from each other they had never known.
Oh my gosh. It was crazy. And I won one for an art review. I think this was a third place one too, for Sweeney Todd, the musical I love writing, theater reviews and high school theater reviews. Those are my peeps, Mm-hmm. So I love doing those kind of stories, and yeah, several good prizes.
So that fits that perfect segue into So what are some of your favorite things about living on the island? And looking forward, what are some of your worries about the island?
Well, I mean, I think that you can, you know, this, I'm a case in point, you know. I don't think I would have had a career in journalism and had this opportunity to do what I did here, and I got to. And I think that that's pretty cool. And, you know, we all have our side gigs. We all have our radio shows. We all have our, and I think that it's a great place for children to grow up. I think for my children at least, I know that's not true for every child on Vashon. It's not beautiful, wonderful, magical. But for my kids, it was a perfect place for them to grow up. And it was a beautiful place for me to be a parent. So my biggest worries, we have a newspaper. I love that about our town. We have a radio station. You know, we have this infrastructure that we can't take for granted. I mean, it's just, we have this community infrastructure of a newspaper and a radio station. And that's rare. It's really rare for a town of our size that we would have these two strong things. So my biggest worries, of course, is it's not affordable. I mean, the affordability problem is just the way that our town has changed, and the amount of money you have to enter this community now is really unfortunate. It makes it not nearly as cool. It makes it not nearly as fun. That we don't have more diversity,
right,
and economic diversity, mm-hmm, and people from all different walks of life. That's what makes a community tick. And we don't have that right now. We need to change it.
More and more, we're an upper white middle class ghetto.
Well, and we're not, you know, it's... I don't know, you know, we need people to work in our businesses. We need a reporter to work in our newspaper. That was part of the problem. Mm-hmm. That was part of that we experienced at the paper. You know, how do you thrive if you're really a bedroom community for second homes and, people who are working from home? COVID did a number on us. And it's just sort of like, we have got to figure this out. We have got to figure out this affordable housing crisis that we're in. I think that's our biggest, most pressing, most crushing problem, because it changes who we are. It changes what this community is.
Yeah, that is a topic we could spend a long time on. Mm-hmm. Very, very important topic. Mm-hmm. Bruce, did I see your hand up?
Yeah, you did. Let me steal one of Kevin's questions if I can, because Liz, you sort of came to journalism late. You came sort of quote unquote accidentally, and yet it became your career, and you became incredibly well respected on the island as an editor of the newspaper. Rather than coming out of journalism school and sort of, you know, that. So have you developed a philosophy of journalism, or a philosophy of what newspapers should be, particularly small weekly community newspapers like on Vashon?
Mm-hmm. I do. I mean, I have a sign behind my desk. Susan gave it to me, and it's a quote from Sojourner Truth, and it holds up, and it's, the quote is, truth is powerful and it prevails. And that's my philosophy of journalism. You know, I think that to have a way and a responsibility and an ethical responsibility to lay down facts about our community every week, that makes our community so much better. I mean, I think it helped us during COVID to stay strong. I think it helped us in so many ways. It helped us, you know, also it's very ecumenical, you know? I mean, it's like we have sports coverage for the high school kids, and we have heartbreaking stuff about our taxing district sometimes. And we have, you know, articles, and I'm so happy I'll never have to write one again, that have the word zoning in them, you know, after I complained about what a big problem we have here. Do you think I'm going to write about zoning anymore? No. So anyway, that's my philosophy. I just think it helps to be accountable to facts about our community. And I think that's what I think is community local journalism is all about. I really do.
to follow up on that, Liz, you know, in our national news, we're finding so much opinion versus hard news. How in the world do we counteract that? I mean, how do we as citizens choose or force folks to be more forthcoming in these things?
Well, I think that it's interesting because I think that our local, this part of the problem here is that people seek news. You know, they want to be informed. Mm-hmm. And in the past decades, you know, so many local papers have folded. You know, it's not over the past few decades. I think the number is something like 2,000 local newspapers have folded and left news deserts where they were. And during the first year of COVID alone, 400 more local newspapers closed. And local newspapers are a little bit different because it really is, everybody's there together in that local newspaper. If it's a good newspaper, we're reading about, you know, this, you know, the Island Center Forest being closed because it's hunting season. We realize there's, you know, we're not just in our bubbles, which is what national news has become to a significant degree. And certainly television news is like that. But people are going to seek those news, and it polarizes and keeps people apart. Social media does the same thing. When you have a little local newspaper, 12 pages, 16 pages, you're paging through it and you're seeing your neighbors. You're seeing the people in your community, and they're different from you. Mm-hmm. You know, they're making news for different reasons. You realize when you read a local obituary, how rich your community, you know, when is to have had that person in it. When you read about you guys crashing your crazy airplane crash, you know, it's like, and learn about the people in your community. That's where it all, I think that's how we become closer. So I forget what the question was.
Well, you know, Truman brought up the issue of how there's so much opinion.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the facts,
right,
or the truth. And that brings up another related issue that I have an argument with people all the time. Although I'm not argumentative, but I do that. There is a national news organization that claims that all they do is report the facts.
Oh, yeah, right.
With no opinion. And I thought, no. That doesn't work.
That's not a fact.
No. You start out with this simple bottom line, and you have no context whatsoever. I mean, you've got to have context. You can have context without having opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. And we don't have any control over if you're Kevin Jones, yes, you are busy working on broad national issues, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people don't live their lives that way. They're operating in a community. But yet, because they seek news, because they seek information, and they go to places where their professional information gatherers don't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't work. They don't hire those people to post stuff on Facebook.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, we start operating in this really polarized way when we don't have something to bring us together as a community.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of things that bring us together here. Our community council, our you know, Bruce's, you know, amazing work as a historian here constantly grounds us and reminds us. And the newspaper is all just a part of that, but I think it's a really important part of it.
Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
people just, I don't think they really realize it. I feel like it's a little magical.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if you have a good, solid community newspaper, you're going to have a good, well-informed community, and you're going to be okay.
Yeah. Bruce, did you want to follow up on something?
Yeah, that's one of my questions to you, Liz. I mean, local newspapers play an incredibly important role. You know, I mean, George Santos would never have been elected if people had paid attention to the local
exactly.
newspaper.
Exactly. Or yeah. if national news had picked up that story, that the local news was all over.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but
so,
nobody was paying attention. Yeah.
Exactly. And lots of examples like that. And,
mm-hmm.
and my question is, as you pointed out, I mean, last figures I saw, two newspapers are closing a week in the United States. You know, and there are becoming news deserts where the only news is sort of national news. And so, what do you see as the future of the beachcomber? And are we going to become a news desert, or is the beachcomber, you know, healthy and strong? And do you see it staying that way in the future?
I think that we just have to keep it strong. You know, it's not like it's magically going to stay strong. We get to choose. You know, we get to decide. And some newspapers ebb and flow. Sometimes they're really good, and especially a local paper. It depends on who's there and who's covering it. But I think that I think we have to keep. We have to prioritize local news coverage here, and we have a great vehicle to do that right now. We're a sound publishing paper. We are owned by a bigger company, so we're a little bit at the mercy of their financial decisions, but we're strong. We keep winning awards. They like us. And so, and also we're on this island, so, you know, we can kind of do what we want.
So the finances, though, I mean, is it all advertising? I mean, that's got to be what keeps
well,
the paper
afloat, yeah,
isn't
I mean,
it?
That's why so many local papers have gone out of business. I mean, the advertising dollars dried up. I mean, everything, and people started going to the internet to buy. And somehow we need to, you know, I don't know. I'm not the person to solve that problem. I'm not like, you know, I don't have a vision of, you know, people are trying. There's all kinds of other smaller news outlets now. Some communities have a digital newspaper that is strong. Mm-hmm. Some keep the advertising coming. I think Vashon is kind of uniquely positioned to stay strong. And, you know, we've got a base of advertisers that have just stayed with us. It's amazing. That's what we need. We need people who are willing to support the paper, subscribe to the paper, read the paper, talk about it. Anyway.
Yeah. And Liz, I want to just put in a plug, not only for you keeping the beachcomber going, because I mean, you were the backbone of keeping the newspaper published every week, but also Darrellyn Anderson.
Oh my gosh, yes.
She is the hidden hero.
Oh, she is. It's Darrellyn, really. I mean, anybody can sit down and write a news. I could have put all that online, but I couldn't have kept the advertising flowing and doing whatever, you know, what she was doing. She was a great person to be in the trenches with, too. I mean, man, she was determined. She was not going to let that go. She wanted that print edition, because the first thing that happened in COVID is a lot of people sound publishing put a lot of the papers online only. And she was like, no. I've got it this week. She was week to week. And Darrellyn is a hero. She really is.
Very much so.
That's great. Yeah.
One more question. I'm sorry. One more question. And then we can pop over to Kevin, is sort of, you know, any time I've entered a new job that somebody else has held, they've always, you know, sort of parting words of wisdom. So what kind of parting words of wisdom did you give to Alex, the new editor?
Oh, well, poor Alex. I'm giving him every day. I'm still there every day.
Still doing it.
And so, no, I mean, Alex comes with skills that I never had. I mean, he's a trained journalist. He's very involved. You've talked to him. He's bright, and he's good. He's a good writer. And so really all my words of wisdom are just what you would think they might be, you know, the Vashon back history, like, oh, that person used to be a school board member. And then, you know, all of that, you know, it's facts. You know, I can help him out with, I can help him out with some facts. And I can also help him with some news sense of what is a story on Vashon as opposed to any place else. He came from Federal Way. He was covering all kinds of stuff, you know. And we're just so lucky to have him. That was just like an angel falling out of the heaven.
I was just going to say, I think Bruce would be a great asset for him. To give him history of the island.
Bruce is one of the first people I said, okay, meet Bruce.
Yeah, absolutely. And read those back items of those articles.
Right. There's a lot to read. He's got a lot of reading to do.
Liz, I wanted to thank you, first of all, for being here today. I also wanted to thank you for the reminder that when my wife and I were shopping for homes on Vashon, I remember sitting in the car, pulling out the map, scratching my head, talking back and forth to Susie about, we should be able to take a right turn right here to find Bunker Trail Road. What?
Oh,
is
my gosh. Right. Yeah. We couldn't believe it. Bunker Trail.
Inside Vashon joke.
Light did lit up. But hey, Liz, another thing that really caught my attention, what you said about Darrellin and then the online paper versus the print edition, and how Darrellin was saying, no, 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 we need to keep the print. Mm-hmm. I know that you created a magnet for people to come together to put things into that print edition. It seems like what lit off in my mind is, you know, that's the forcing function. That's the deadline. Is that it? Or is there something else about the print edition that's sort of magical compared to online?
I know. It's nice to hold it in your hands. Mm-hmm. It's nice to get the little newsprint on you. It looks good. It's like, and another thing that I think it was really great that happened is all of a sudden we went to a broadsheet. We were a little tabloid, remember? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And all and then like right during COVID, that was a Sound Publishing thing. They were like, you're a broadsheet. We're like, really? Because a broadsheet is so cool. You know, it's a big paper and there's pages to turn. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't kid myself that a lot of people, you know, on Vashon don't read it or buy it or think they need it or, you know, but it's there for everybody. And mm-hmm. I think that everybody, if they sit down with this old-fashioned thing, they'll maybe remember some of the old-fashioned community values that are good mm-hmm. that we have.
Yeah. Bruce.
Yeah, I wanted to get your reaction, Liz, to there's two sort of well-known aphorisms about newspapers. You know, one is that it's the first draft of history.
And right.
I agree with that one. Mm-hmm. The other one is that, you know, remember tomorrow, it's just going to be fish wrapper.
Yeah. Right. Right.
How do you reconcile those two?
Well, here's another one. Don't get in arguments with people who buy ink by the barrel.
Well, that's right.
That's my favorite one. But how do you reconcile it? Yeah, it makes lovely, you know, wrapping paper for Christmas gifts. It, you know, you can do a lot of stuff besides wrapping fish in it. But it's true. It's impermanent. It's changing. And yet somehow having the paper online, having that permanent record is really important, you know. If people want to know anything about the things that happened at the school district this past year, they can go online and they can find it easily. And I think that, so I think that there is something really nice about having both of those things.
So what does the future hold for you? Are you're working as a reporter
more
part-time?
More moss off the roof, I guess. More fun days like the one I had last Saturday.
What about theater and writing and that sort of thing?
I like writing news. You know, I wrote a lot of things in my life. I wrote plays. I wrote three plays. I wrote poems. I wrote memoir kind of stuff. You know, I love writing, and I've always loved writing.
You wrote that wonderful piece on the troll.
I like to write on Facebook, right. Publish my own brilliant little ditties on Facebook, but I just sort of, I think journalism is a really great form for me. So, I mean, hopefully I can still do journalism for a long time and write good news stories and keep my hand in. I don't want to do the moss on the roof thing every week.
Nobody does. Yeah, that's right.
But also I can see my, you know, kids more often. I can do more, you know, have a life that isn't so stressful. So,
well, we really do thank you for coming in today. Is there something
fun
we missed that you wanted to emphasize or that we forgot? Before we leave, we covered a lot of territory.
Well, what time is it? We don't have much time left, do
Not
we?
Really.
5 minutes.
5 minutes? I was going to talk about how much we're taxed on Vashon. property taxes.
Well,
and because that's another function of the newspaper, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, know, and elections
know,
coming.
You actually can. I mean, we normally at the end of the show have pieces on the local, the national, and the international news, and there's plenty of that. The Hamas attack.
Oh, no, that's
attack, a lot. That's, and, no, that's all right. There's the whole rudderless U.S. House of Representatives.
Yeah,
but
what a mess.
The thing that's near and dear, maybe not dear, to many Vashonites is this issue of taxing. So go ahead.
Right.
What were you going to say?
Okay. All right, because we talked about the increased cost of housing, and that all translates to, this topic. So I just I hear some numbers from 2023. Okay? So the island's total assessed value for all these homes here was about $5 billion. Okay? And so the regular tax rate is per $1,000 assessed value is $9.18. So if everybody paid the full rate, which they do not, the island would pay about a total of $46 million to all these government entities that collect taxes on Vashon. Okay? So for our, some of these go in buckets. Like some of them are, Vashon-based things. Like the school district gets about $10 million, of that property tax that we pay in 2023. VIFR gets about $5.5 million. Vashon Healthcare District gets about $2 million. Vashon Park District gets about $1.5 million. And our little cemetery district gets only $120,000. And look at what they do with it. I mean, it's kind of amazing. So that adds up to about $20 million. And all the rest go to the bigger off-island government and governments that benefit Vashon, the state school property tax, the levies for things like, roads and sheriffs and road construction and repair, the neighborhood, all of that stuff. But that's a lot of money, isn't it? I mean, to me, it seems like a lot of money to keep track of in one year and how it's being spent and whether or not we're happy with that. Yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to conclude as to how we could, how can I lower my taxes on my house?
Well, I think the thing that a newspaper does that is so cool is that it kind of keeps track of all this money.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
And if something's, are we getting our value for this money or not? It's a lot of money.
That is always the question.
And so I think that that's what's another really important function of a newspaper is to keep track of all this money.
Kevin.
I'm really glad you brought that up. Another important function is that how we as residents of Vashon Mori Island tell our elected officials how to spend that money.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
Just so you know, the King County just finished their needs assessment for Vashon Mori Islanders. And apparently Vashon Mori Island had the largest response to that King County survey. And at the next Vashon Mori Community Council meeting will be an opportunity for us to determine whether the summary that King County received is really the priorities that we think are important for our islands.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, if you want to really figure out how we benefit from that 20 million or so, however many million it is, show up in the next community council meeting. You'll have a chance to really put your finger on the scale of what we want in return for those tax dollars we pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
That is important, and the county does actually listen to what the community council has to say and the recommendations of the people, what they feel about it. So thanks for that public service announcement there, Kevin. Well, we're wrapping it up today. Elizabeth Shepherd, former editor, sometimes editor-in-chief of the Vashon Mori Island Beachcomber, thank you very much for being with us today. We learned a lot about you, and we thank you. We can't thank you enough, actually, for keeping the Beachcomber alive during the pandemic and doing the marvelous work you do. So for Elizabeth Shepherd, Kevin, Bruce, Truman, and me, thank you all for listening to The Brown Briefly. And tune in next Tuesday when we will be talking to Cyrus Anderson on a very interesting topic, the Mori Island UFO incident of June 1947, which preceded Roswell, New Mexico, by a month. So that should be interesting. Thank you all.
And thank you so much for having me.